This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
it will weaken the insurgency, but the question is, will it weaken it substantially? And honestly, I'm not sure.
That's Professor David DeRoche of the National Defense University in Washington talking about the impact of the death of an Islamic State leader in the Sinai. Details coming up.
Also, the head of South Sudan's army, General James Alongo Mawut, has died after a short illness, and Libya closes over half of its detention centers for thousands of refugees.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the UN Refugee Agency reports a first group of 53 Sudanese refugees living in Chad has returned to the homes they fled in North Darfur more than one decade ago. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says it hopes this first repatriation of Sudanese refugees will trigger the voluntary return of thousands more. The UNHCR says the security situation in Darfur has greatly improved since February 2003, when rebel groups in the region began fighting the government of Sudan. That war killed tens of thousands of people and displaced millions, both inside Sudan and as refugees in neighboring countries. Conditions in Darfur since have dramatically improved. The group of 53 refugees who left the Iridimi camp in eastern Chad Saturday are among some 300,000 refugees from Darfur currently living in 12 UNHCR and government-run camps. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahechich tells VOA there has been a significant reduction in inter-ethnic tensions and displacement in Darfur. He says the agency has provided proof of that to the returning refugees.
It is important to understand that these people came first on a so-called go-and-see visit to see the conditions, to see what their homes look like and so on, before making that decision. There is a growing interest in the returns, and we do expect that there will be, as I said earlier, thousands of people returning in the course of this year.
Mahechich says the refugees are given transportation and a return package to help them restart their lives. He says the aid includes a three-month supply of food rations provided by the World Food Program. He says the UNHCR and partners are working with the Sudanese government to improve services in North Darfur. He notes the importance of rehabilitating the depressed area to ensure returns are durable and sustainable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The head of South Sudan's army, General James Ajongo Mawut, has died after a short illness. Information Minister Michael Makui says Ajongo died this morning in the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Waki Simon Wudu, a reporter for VOA South Sudan in Focus, says news outlets in South Sudan reported last week that Ajongo had traveled abroad for medical care of an undisclosed health problem. Through Makui, President Salva Kiir offered his condolences to Ajongo's family. Ajongo came from the Luo community in northern Bahar al-Ghazal. He joined the Sudanese People's Liberation Army in 1984, shortly after it was formed to fight against the Khartoum government. Last year, Ajongo replaced Army Chief of Staff General Paul Malong, who had a falling out with the president and has formed his own rebel movement. Makui describes Ajongo as an honest, hard-working soldier who will be accorded a full state funeral. The government announced 3 days of mourning for him.
Libya says it has closed over half the detention centers for the thousands of refugees who have fled conflict in neighboring countries. Still, the migrants continue to arrive, finding difficult conditions, little work, and predatory human smugglers who take advantage of those seeking to flee to Europe. Othman Belbasi, the chief of mission in Libya for the International Organization for Migration, tells VOA's Paul Alexander that he hopes all the detention centers can be closed as the migrants' misery is eased.
So, talking about the humanitarian situation in the country in general, we believe that a lot of improvements need to happen, and the situation is not ideal at the moment. Talking about the political side, I'm purely talking about the humanitarian side.
What are the critical needs right now?
Unfortunately, the majority of the migrants in Libya are irregular, and they do not hold valid travel documents, which makes them also vulnerable, and there is a little proof about their nationality and also very limited opportunities for jobs in the country, given the current political and security challenges. With this situation, there needs to be a solution in different parts, I would say, or in different phases. At the short term, we need to try to address the needs, support people wherever they are, return those who want to go back home to return back to their home country and start a new life. But the majority would still want to stay in Libya, or the majority still are in Libya. So we need to support them wherever they are. And this will require a huge effort, not only from the international community, but also from the Libyan authorities. Knowing the legal status of those people, it is not very easy for any government to say, I am willing to regularize this large number of migrants in the country, but we are saying small initiatives can help, and also more support for either resettlement programs or return or job opportunities in Libya would be very important.
The government has said that the number of migrants held by authorities has dropped by 80% since last May, and that they have closed 20 of the 53 migrant detention centers over that period. Is that a good sign that the numbers are dropping?
Yes. So in average, before what happened in the area of Sobrata in November last year, the average number in detention centers was between 4,000 to 6,000. There was a peak due to what happened in Sobrata, where a number of migrants were on the streets, and that's why they were transferred to detention centers, which raised the number to almost 20,000. So it wasn't the normal number that we expect to be in detention centers in Libya. It was just related to one incident for a specific period of time. And after that, the numbers reduced. Now the latest we received is slightly higher than 5,000, maybe 5,500 migrants in detention centers. Now the government so far has closed in the last few months about 24 detention centers in Libya. We see this as a positive development, but again, we continue calling for the closure of all detention centers and providing alternatives to detention. But until this happens, because this may also require legal framework, we would hope that we will be able to at least improve the living conditions and the standards installed in those centers, stop arbitrary detention, release of vulnerable cases, and definitely no detention for children.
What is the current situation with the human smuggling rings?
Our smugglers maybe are not any more directly involved in the transportation business, but also there are many actors who join this business, as it's a very good economic opportunity. In addition, the risks associated with smuggling are not that high, I would say. That's why more action against the smugglers will drop the chance of new people joining those networks, because there will be more risks associated with this business.
So are the numbers of arrivals changing at all?
We don't have accurate figures about the number of arrivals to Libya, which we don't believe have dropped significantly in the last 6 months. But the number of arrivals to Europe has definitely dropped.
So are you getting the cooperation that you need?
The situation on the ground is challenging. You will always need more support, not only in terms of funding, but also in terms of advocacy, that we try also with all the countries involved to make sure that there is better treatment in detention. But if you talk about an overcrowded detention center, no matter how much you try to improve, you need to make sure that those centers will not be overcrowded. You need to make sure that the management of the centers is capable to carry out the duties. The main issue in Libya will continue to be restoring security, peace, and definitely the economic development.
That was Othman Belbasi, the chief of mission in Libya for the International Organization for Migration, speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander.
In Cameroon, it has become more common to see official documents leaked on social media. The texts of President Paul Biya's two most recent nationwide addresses were circulating before he even delivered them. Authorities are cracking down. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé that at least 16 government employees have been detained over alleged leaks since the start of the year.
In March, a confidential presidential memo began circulating on social media in Cameroon. It instructed security agencies to restrict travel for about 24 senior state workers accused of stealing state funds. Three police officers are now behind bars awaiting trial in connection with the leak. In April, another confidential presidential order surfaced online, this one increasing the allowances of soldiers deployed to the turbulent English-speaking regions. Two defense ministry staffers were called up for questioning. Rights groups have long criticized Cameroon and other African governments for being overly opaque. Cameroon-born analyst Tem Fumbu is with the Open Society Initiative for West Africa, based in Dakar.
It is part of a broader pattern of crackdown against any sort of dissent. It's not only about those who are leaking official information, but there's been systematic crackdown against all those who try to dissent in Cameroon. So it's a very alarming situation, and civic space in Cameroon has been closing very considerably in the last few years. And it's very concerning, especially given now that we're going into elections in 2018.
The response from African governments is often that transparency must take a back seat to stability. Cameroon is no exception. In March, Prime Minister Philemon Yang said the leaking of sensitive official documents threatens both the Biya administration and national security. His office declined VOA's request for an interview. Lawyers for state employees detained over alleged leaks declined to comment to VOA as the cases are ongoing. Here at a documentation center in Yaoundé, VOA found several government workers either printing or typing documents from their offices. They say they lacked the necessary computer equipment or had run short of ink. Information technology specialist Peter Suife said state workers need education on dealing with sensitive information electronically.
You have government offices that have computers. The operators of these computers don't know how to properly store some documents in their files. When they type, they take the key to a documentation for printing. After printing, they are supposed to cancel what they have printed in that documentation rather than allow in the machine. Tomorrow you see the documents already on streets before the state ever make a statement.
The law in Cameroon says government employees must protect classified and confidential materials. Failure to do so could lead to dismissal as well as penalties ranging from a $10 or 5,000 CFA franc fine to as much as 1 year's imprisonment. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is putting his skills as a negotiator to work as he tries to ease tensions that sparked violent protests in Northwest Province. Yesterday, Ramaphosa left early from the Commonwealth Summit in London to deal with the crisis which led to Botswana to close its border with the province. Police have fired rubber bullets to disperse crowds of protesters in the provincial capital of Malkang. They are angry over alleged corruption that they say has eroded local services. They reportedly set cars on fire, looted shops, and blockaded roads. Ramaphosa, who was chosen in February to take over from scandal-plagued President Jacob Zuma, has vowed to root out endemic corruption in the country. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehigis Wuhi. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The head of South Sudan's army, General James Ajong Mawat, has died after a short illness. Libya has closed over half the detention centers for thousands of refugees who have fled conflict in neighboring countries. And South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is putting his skills as a negotiator to work as he tries to ease tensions that sparked violent protests in the country's northwest province. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Egyptian military spokesman Tamir Rafai says Nasser al-Bouzoukhoul, identified as the leader of the Islamic State group in central Sinai, was killed in a shootout with Egyptian army troops in Sinai. Professor David DeRoche of the National Defense University told VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi that the removal of the leader could weaken the insurgency. But the group seems to have expanded the battlefield from northern Sinai to the center.
It will weaken the insurgency, but the question is, will it weaken it substantially? And honestly, I'm not sure. I mean, the attack on the 14th in central Sinai was unexpected, I think. And that shows that the insurgency is spreading. The leadership is always a target in a counterinsurgency, and it's encouraging to see that they've made progress against it. But it is deceptive to think that if you just take out one person, particularly for what is really a broadly rooted insurgency, if you just take out one person, you're not going to solve the problem.
A few days ago, the military said 8 soldiers were killed and 15 were wounded when militants wearing explosive belts blow themselves up as they try to infiltrate a military base again in central Sinai. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that is a really bad sign because that shows a number of things. First off, it shows, you know, you're no longer just fighting in the areas around El Arish. It is an expansion of the battlefield. Secondly, it took place at a very large Egyptian military base, so it suggests that there was a breakdown of operational security, operational discipline, or possibly a compromise of some members of the security forces. And then just the scale of the destruction was very, very unfortunate. So that's a step backwards. And, you know, December 23rd is when President al-Sisi said it was going to be solved in 3 months. So we're past that. And instead of solving the problem, we've actually moved, you know, the battlefield has expanded. So it's not a good sign.
Would that campaign announced by President Sisi be able to eradicate terrorism totally as President Sisi promised?
No. Well, obviously, he's missed his own timeline. He's focusing just on security when you're dealing with what is in effect a broad-based insurgency that has elements of foreign leadership, but basically it's a broad-based insurgency. The social compact between the security forces and the people who live in the Sinai, as well as increasingly in other places in Egypt, is broken. And what you're going to see are people will oppose the administration, they'll oppose the government, some violently, some passively, but all of that contributes to the insurgency, and you can't kill your way out of that situation.
That was Professor David DeRoche of the National Defense University in Washington. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi.
Ugandan government officials and refugee agencies say they have managed to stem cholera fatalities among refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Officials say no new cholera deaths have been registered for the past 2 weeks, and those who have shown symptoms have been treated and discharged. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
For 2 months now, authorities have been struggling to scale down the cholera outbreak in Uganda's Changwali refugee settlement, which houses majority of the new Democratic Republic of Congo refugee arrivals. On February 11th, a cholera outbreak was declared at the Sebagoro landing site on Lake Albert, where the majority of the refugees fleeing violence in the DRC's Ituri province arrive. The disease has killed 44 people, and there have been nearly 2,100 suspected and confirmed cases. 2,040 of these have been successfully treated. Officials say the disease has been contained, although refugees continue to arrive. Jole Kebirunji is the camp commandant of Changwali settlement.
The admissions can now tentatively, we could have gone as far as 600 and above, tentatively that, in terms of admissions. But we are happy that when they're admitted, they are able to be handled and they go through that. We are no longer having death case threats.
Cholera causes severe vomiting and diarrhea, and if untreated, it can be quickly fatal. It is transmitted by tainted water. Irene Nakasita is head of communications for the Uganda Red Cross. She says creating awareness on the spread and prevention of cholera has been very handy in stemming the spread.
It's hard for us to control what they do. So you'll find people littering, people doing open defecation. Basically, what we are doing is hygiene promotion through sensitization. And this is what has helped us to curb the outbreak of cholera here at the reception and as well as in the settlement camp.
She says strict measures have been instituted to make sure no one carries cholera or other diseases to the vulnerable refugees in the settlements.
Everybody who comes in here is supposed to be sprayed so that just in case you picked any bacteria or any, you know, germs from anywhere, you cannot bring them here in the camp.
The Uganda government plans to roll out a cholera vaccination program among the Changwali refugees next month. However, aid agencies say cholera remains a serious risk as new refugees flow into Uganda. The refugees are living in overcrowded temporary shelters with limited access to safe and clean water and inadequate sanitation facilities. Nearly 70,000 Congolese have arrived in Uganda since the start of 2018. Aid agencies and donor governments expect that number to grow. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
It's been a long week. You worked hard. Probably need a break. I can help you with that. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This weekend, tune in and relax. Energize. Connect with great music and great people from across the African continent. This Sunday's 55-minute program features promising young artists on the rise. There's also music news and a feature song of the week from Ghana this time that will keep you current and hip to what's happening on the continent. So join me this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Music time in Africa. Yeah!
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.